Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Surprisingly, over 80% of the American electorate is not informed about the structure and operation of political districts across the country, and more importantly, within their local communities. Welcome to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. We're grateful to address you once again on this May 11, 2017. And for the next 27 minutes or so, we will talk from the topic, how political boundaries are arranged in America. As you perhaps know, we have been speaking about things related to the electorate and voicing your opinion in a positive, productive way, other than engaging in senseless rioting and even unuseful protests and things of that nature. Not to say that your interest is not well, in better ways we can do things, I believe. The number is 657-383-0944. If you give us a call here, we'll entertain your question and or comment. But before we open our phone lines here, let's do our monologue briefly, and then we'll come back for questions and comments. We look forward to hearing from our guest panelists. We hope you'll be able to join us today. Again, how political boundaries are arranged in America. In the process of setting electoral districts, gerrymandering is a practice intended to establish political advantage for a particular party or group by manipulating boundaries. The resulting district is known as a gerrymander. However, the word can also refer to the process itself. The term gerrymandering has negative connotations. Two principal tactics are used in gerrymandering. One is cracking, the diluting of the voting power of the opposing party's supporters across many districts. And the other is tacking, concentrating the opposing party's voting power in one district to reduce the voting power in other districts. In addition to use achieving desired electoral results for a particular party, gerrymandering may be used to help or hinder a particular demographic, such as a political or ethnic or racial linguistic, religious, or class group. What we see is in the United States federal voting district boundaries, they tend to produce a majority of constituents representing of African Americans or other racial minorities. And these are known as majority-minority districts. Okay? Gerrymandering can also be used to protect an incumbent, someone currently in office. But again, it's a tactic and a manipulation of voters. And this is really what we want to focus on. Briefly, let me talk about the structure of the United States Senate. The United States Senate is the upper chamber of the United States Congress, which along with the House of Representatives, which is known as the lower chamber, composes the legislature of the United States. The composition of powers of the Senate are established by Article 1 of the United States Constitution. The Senate is composed of senators who represent each of the several states, all 50, with each state being equally represented by two senators, regardless of their population, serving staggered terms of 6 years. With 50 states present in the union, that means we have 100 senators. Okay? Well, in the lower house, or the House of Representatives in the U.S. government, the quantity, or what they call apportionment, and boundaries, which are called, referred to as redistricting of districts, are determined each time a census is taken every 10 years. This is why it's important to participate in the census, because if you don't have enough people represented in your district, you cut votes out from those that are in your actual neighborhood or in your community. Although in some cases states have changed the boundaries more than once per census, it is taken every census, typically. All told, there are 435 districts, respectfully, each represented by one elected official. The boundaries of the district often shift with each redistricting, which is why the gerrymandering plays an important role. Over time, the region and demographics represented in the district can change substantially. Furthermore, districts sometimes retain the same boundaries while changing their district numbers. Now, let's talk about, well, that's the U.S. government or federal. Now, let's talk about on your state level. The state senate, or what is referred to often as the upper house, in 49 bicameral legislatures, upper house is called the senate. Until 1964, state senators were generally elected from districts that were not necessarily equal in population. However, because of a Supreme Court case, that changed. In some cases, state senate districts were based partly on county lines. In the vast majority of the states, the senate districts provided proportionately greater representation in rural areas. However, this Supreme Court case in 1964, which was the decision known as Reynolds versus Sims, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that unlike the United States Senate, state senates must be elected from districts of appropriately equal population. Okay? So it's based on how many people are within a certain district. Within that whole state, they cut it in half, and you get your senators. I shouldn't say they cut it in half, but they proportion it based on the people that are within a certain senatorial district. Okay, and that's how to determine of all the people in the state. Within that, you break it down and determine who represents you in the state senate. So there are fewer senators than there are state representatives. In the lower house, or the state house of representatives, in 40 of the 49 bicameral state legislatures, the lower house is called the House of Representatives. The name House of Delegates is used in the state of Maryland, Virginia, and West Virginia. California and Wisconsin call their lower house state assemblies, while Nevada and New York simply call their lower house assembly. New Jersey calls its lower house general assembly. Okay? Now, and again, respectively, based on how many people are within a given House Representative district within the state, they're determined you get a there's a senator, I mean, I'm sorry, a House of Representatives who represents a certain amount of individuals in a district boundary. And it is the state legislature that determines that. Depending on which political party, Democrat, Republican, Republican, Democrat, that often determines where the districts are. And it is designed to favor one particular party over another when it comes to having dominance, control, and voting strength, even in your state elections. On the municipal or county level, there's a very similar process, but slightly different. And I would argue that this is where your greater strength is in terms of having say in how you're governed and who represents you in that government. Okay? Directed by the respective state legislature that has authority over your local city or county government or municipality, and specified by the city or county charter. That is the bylaws, if you will, or the constitution for your city government or your county government, the charter itself. It has to be approved by the state, though. The political boundaries for each what is known as council districts, or often within that wards, aldermanic wards, the geographic and political boundaries set by local government for constituent voters. So again, we've broken it down for a third time on the local level is what we're referring to this as, okay? And each of those local council districts or wards, you have either a alderman in a ward or a council person in the council district. In larger cities, you have both council districts, and within them you have automatic wards that are further broken down. But each of them represents yet another political boundary with certain number of residents and addresses of voters. Within this boundary is what is called a voting precinct. This is where I want to focus attention this morning, the voting precinct, which is the smallest political boundary set to identify constituent voters throughout the U.S. Eligible voters within a given voting precinct are assigned to a location or a site that they go to vote. If you show up somewhere other than that place, you're not eligible to vote there. If you don't come within the prescribed time, usually from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., for that voting precinct to receive voters, you don't get a chance to vote. So it's so vitally important that you're aware of where your voting precinct is based on your neighborhood and where you actually live, your legal address. Incidentally, as we mentioned in the past, that's what establishes your citizenship. So eligible voters within a given voting precinct are assigned to that location. Perhaps the most effective means of controlling the power that comes with the right to vote. We think about the 1965 Voting Rights Act, right? That right to vote, the 15th Amendment, right? Here is where, when you look at it very carefully, you have the best opportunity of being organized and identifying what is best for you. When individuals come to run for office seeking your vote and they want your confidence, this is the prime time to make it known to them what your agenda is, what your interests are, and how, if they're going to be accountable and responsive to you, they can represent that. But if you haven't thought about that, it is virtually impossible for them to know. And politicians, as we discovered the other day, really don't care. All they want is your vote. But an advocate will take time to hear you and to work with you to identify how, as they represent you in government, they can best include that in their efforts while they're there. Okay? And it is there that I will propose to you the concept of what I'm calling a precinct governance council. Now, I was inspired by James Luther Bevel, who was a right-hand, one of Dr. King's right-hand men during the Civil Rights Movement. And they helped organize voters through SNCC with Stokely Carmichael and others, Students for Nonviolence Conference. And part of what they had is this concept that I'm referring to as a precinct governance council. It's not a formal body that's approved by the city government or by the state or the federal government, but it is an organized group of voters who have brought themselves under one agenda, specifically for their voting precinct. So a set of blocks or within a given neighborhood, there is a well-defined point of view, and when individuals come seeking votes there, these individuals are unified, they're educated, and they're prepared to articulate what it is they expect from not only their elected officials on the council level, in state office, in federal office, but most importantly, that they expect from the government itself. And when individuals are organized on this level, it is my belief that they stand the best chance, the very best chance of getting what they want. I want to encourage you now to give us a call here at 657-383-0944. We'll be happy to entertain your question or comments. And we're going to pause for a brief message from the group we heard yesterday and we've been listening to throughout this series, the OJs. I think they made a very, very powerful point in one of their songs in terms of giving the people what they want. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the lyrics there and how they're applicable to this question, how political boundaries are arranged in America, and how they affect you. When we come back on the other side of this break. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, and we're talking today from the topic, how political boundaries are arranged in America. And more specifically, we're going into the conversation to understand the function of political districts and how they affect citizens. You heard the OJ say, you got to give the people. It didn't say black people. It didn't say Hispanic people. It didn't say white people, Indian people. It said the people. Those that are within a respective political district. The Constitution affords each of us the right to have our voice heard. to make sure that there is peace and harmony, there's tranquility, and that the needs and the welfare of the people are met, all of the people. This is probably the best way we can ensure that we get along with one another. But I would contend that due to a lack of understanding, perhaps a lack of interest altogether, we find ourselves fighting over things that are really not important. Okay? And particularly with young people, those that are disinfected. There are some questions that we posed on our Facebook group, and I want to just kind of hit those a little bit, and I'll pose the question. You can give me a call right here at 657. We have about 9 minutes, 657-383-0944. If you're listening today, it doesn't matter where you're calling from in the country. Be happy to entertain your meaningful contribution to our dialogue. Give us a call here, 657-383-0944. I'm going to pose a question, and we'll strive to answer these in the next 9 minutes. But if you're on our Facebook group and you're listening, as always, you can do likewise. Even after the show has been recorded, feel free to give your answers and response, because what we want to do is to maintain healthy instructional dialogue. I think this will help with the race issues that we're finding, as well as the frustration and discontent we see by many young and old in terms of their marching and things of that nature. Realize that many people don't accept the current leadership in the White House, but the question is, what can you do to be proactive about ensuring that at least you and your community get what you need and we're not at one another's throats, white, black, green, purple, or the other? Okay, so the first question that we pose for today is, for those most disinfected by the political process, what options do they have to make a difference for themselves? I think that's a very relevant question in light of the fact, again, that we see even college students now. I was stricken by the news of the current education chief or director or Secretary of Education, Betty DeVos. Understandably, many people don't feel as though she's qualified. Nonetheless, she's in the position. And she got there through a formal process of government. And she has the opportunity to help or to hurt individuals, depending on federal resources and funds that come from our federal government, flow through our state and down to our local government. How do we reasonably engage her office and others to make sure we get our children, particularly those who are struggling academically in disadvantaged schools, they get what they need, right? And that's the nature of that particular question. What is it that you can do if you feel as though you're disinfected by the political process? What options do you have to make a difference for yourself? Well, I'll be happy to entertain again anyone's comments, of course, in the next 6 minutes here, but I'll offer mine. Given the most disinfected voters, can organize strong, proactive precinct governance councils within their voting precinct and control their collective voting power. Now, what you'll find is that there are often resources available to populations of citizens, but many of them are not aware of them, so they don't benefit from them. Even though you have an elected council person or state rep or state senator, and even a House of Rep and a state and a U.S. senator, somehow the information doesn't get to you. But when, as a voting body, on the voting precinct level, you have an agenda that includes a policy or plan to leverage even funds in education, in the social service, in the health arena, and all those other things, when people come around to get your vote every election cycle, you can have an honest dialogue with them about how is it you're going to ensure that we are kept in the loop about these things. And we know that we're getting our just share of those type of things. I would argue that it is there on that organized level. While it's not formally a public government organization. It's a organized body among voters, and you have every right to organize yourself. And to the other question is, what is the most effective level of political control and change for citizens? Is it protests? Is it being obstructionist? Is it being foul? Is it being virulent? What is it? I would contend that the first and most potent level for voter empowerment is the local voting precinct. That's where your neighbors are, people you see every day. In other words, in your backyard, you share the same issues. At the local voting precinct, it reflects in real time the social, economic, and political concerns that you share with your neighbors, not only in your neighborhood, but in your local city, in your state, and so on and so on. By being organized, and if you have in a council district 4 or 5 voting precincts and everybody's working together collectively, you have a greater strength in the local council government. Accordingly, as you're organized and you have those organized voting precincts in each of the respective council districts that make up your state representative district or your senatorial, state senatorial district, you have a greater strength and control and voice for that individual who is representing you or who should be representing you. Okay? The last question, I'll just hit this right quick before we get out of here. How does gerrymandering, as we introduced earlier, positively or negatively affect you as a voter? You can find these answers on our Facebook group. Given the fact that gerrymandering is a political tool used by officials, elected officials, of giving a political party, to gain control or advantage in elections or policy making. If you belong to the party in the minority, you are forced with the will of the majority. If you don't belong to any party, you're subject to the manipulation of either of the parties in power at a given time. Public policy should benefit the interests and the will of the people, irrespective of political affiliation. That's my spiel for today, this May 11, 2017. And I would encourage each of you to think of how you can have conversations with your neighbors and other people in your voting precinct. I think this is very important because we can dispel some of the myths that you have no voice, you have no power, you have nothing to say. This is Talk Straight. Go to our website, www.dfcinstitute.com, and learn more about what we do with this lecture series. Join us on Facebook there. You can catch that link on that webpage. This is your host, Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're grateful for your participation. And we will see you on next Tuesday, God willing. Mm-hmm.